Do you want to read poems that have substance? Her eyes looked out at her new class of 18-year-olds, and she had eyes like an eagle. And then she said, do you want to read poems that stir you and that challenge you, that will sustain you through all your journey? Poems that have images and metaphors that can make you think about life in all different ways. She was like Yoda put in Mother Teresa's body on top this was amazing. She was an amazing little woman who taught our class, our English professor. And she, as she asked those questions, I found myself like on the edge of my seat. And I was just like, wow, what she's saying. I hadn't read much poetry till that time. And then all of a sudden, she got really quiet and she said these words, then read Gerard Manley Hopkins. And I remember I was like, yes, I'm in. And I wanted to raise my hand, but that had been really awkward. So I contained it, my excitement. But I remember thinking that this is my Dead Poets Society moment. That this is a moment of like energy and passion and love. And I was like, I am in it. And so I wish I could tell you that over the semester I read every poem of Gerard Manley Hopkins, but I didn't. But I got through one. Yes, one. I read one poem all semester. No joking at all. I read 100 words the whole semester. Overachiever. And this one poem, though, it's As King Catchers Catch Fire. And this poem, I swear to you, I brought up in every class discussion. I wrote every reflection essay, and then I wrote my final essay for the class. This poem has this something incredibly special about it. And I just want to share with you briefly about this poem. So the poem is titled, As Kingfishers Catch Fire. Now this poem, right away, a kingfisher is a type of bird. It's a bird that has this incredibly special, beautiful colors to it. So they call it plumage, right? Not only the colors itself, but the way the feathers are designed on the bird's body. So this is a kingfisher, and there's many different species of kingfishers, but kingfishers swoop to catch fish. So they live off of fish, but when this beautiful animal swoop to catch fish, the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins describes it as king catchers catch fire. So the very beauty of their very feathers and the dynamic colors, the redolent and radiant colors, are like a fire that is swooping down to catch that fish. And so it gives you this image of creation. And then the very next line says, as dragonflies draw flame. And so the poet makes you think about a dragonfly. Dragonflies have these incredibly intricate wings. They can fly forwards, they can fly backwards, they can turn in midair, they can hover for minutes at a time. So as these dragonflies draw flame, their wings, as they go quick and fast, are like a flame. So the poet brings our minds to this place of creation. And it's amazing because it's like all creation is in its proper order, right? As these kingfishers dive, and as these dragonflies draw the flame, creation is working right. Everything in its place, the bears, the beavers, the rocks, everything is in its perfect place in this created order. And you're meant to sort of stand by this poem and think, wow, that's significant. That's amazing. King catchers and dragonflies. But then all of a sudden, this poet drives us deeper and he uses these words. He's going to start us introducing us to where is humanity in this whole poem. He says, each mortal thing does one thing and the same. Crying, what I do is me, for that I came. And so at the core of a kingfisher, at the core of this bird was created to swoop in and grab these fish. This dragonfly with its intricate wings was created to swirl throughout the air, to use those wings in remarkable and special ways. And Gerard Manley Hopkins is saying, you are created with something so core to your humanity, just like creation. When everything works in creation, it's this beautiful symphony, right? There's this synergy going on. But what about human beings? What are they doing? When are they diving and leaping and stepping and giving it themselves all to what they have? That's what the poem is asking us to think about. Then, the poem comes to this line at the very end. Christ, what about God in this whole symphony of human life? For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his, to the Father through the features of men's faces. And I remember when I got to the end of that poem, that beautiful line, for Christ plays in 10,000 places. It's like everywhere in our world, there is a Christ play. There is a man, a woman, a child giving themselves, breaking themselves open and pouring themselves out, like we talked about last week. Lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his. And so it raises for us this sense of gravitas, this sense of this dramatic pull and this weight in our world, is when people, ordinary, average people, take hold or are taken a hold of this Christian message and give themselves fully to serving, to loving, and to knowing this God. As something beautiful, something remarkable happens across the universe. Something of creational beauty begins to happen when we give ourselves away. And so there's this incredible story in the Gospel of Mark. At the end, the middle of chapter 6, Jesus has just been kicked out of his hometown. And it's funny because the whole ministry of Jesus is going really good, right? He's healing, he's teaching, crowds are coming. And then you get to the middle of chapter 6, and his family is like, you're out of here. He's not accepted in his hometown. And so then something really remarkable happens. Jesus gathers his disciples, his closest friends to him, and then he puts them in teams of two by two by two. And he says to them this, he blesses them with authority, the power to spread this kingdom of love. And so as a reader, you're like, oh, something significant is happening because I thought the hero of this story of Jesus, and it is, but there's something more. There's a deeper layer of beauty going on. And all of a sudden, Jesus says, take no bread with you, take no bag, take no money, no extra tunics. Only thing you need for this journey is a staff and a pair of sandals. And so as a reader, you're like, what? I mean, I need some extra food. I don't know about you, but I like to eat. And you're calling, and he was calling his disciples to go into all these different villages, two by two by two. And then he invited them to do the same thing he was doing, to teach people about the kingdom of love, to announce to them that something new and something fresh had come, that God was about so much love that it was almost uncontainable in the world. And so as he sends them out into this world, there's this special moment that's happening. Jesus doesn't do his ministry alone. Jesus hands his ministry to people like you and like me, people with failures and faults and a whole bunch of fears. And he invites them to spread this love, this forgiveness, this compassion and service, this healing, village by village, because he couldn't do it all by himself. It's often fascinating to look at a map and see that the area of Palestine, that little teeny area that's literally 90 miles from top to bottom, that's the only area of ministry Jesus ever lived in. It's his disciples, it's his closest friends who went to the other areas. And so it brings us back to this poem, this lovely, beautiful image. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his. There's this sense of wonder and awe that in all of the creation, we are asked to be God's hands and to be God's feet in the midst of this world. And the poet is trying to get us to say that that's when our hearts are like dragonflies or like kingfishers. That's when we come radically alive, when we give ourselves away for others. He moved himself from Tarsus to Jerusalem. He was given a first-rate education. He studied with Gamaliel, like the head rabbi of the day. I'm kicking rocks all over the place. Thank you. Nice. What's that game when you throw rocks? Good job. Well done. He studied with Gamaliel, and he wanted to become what's called a Pharisee or a Jewish religious leader of his day. And all of a sudden, there was this buzz that was spreading of these early Christians, right? Village by village, two by two, they're going. And they had to radically trust that this God would provide for them. That's why they didn't bring bread. They had to trust that something bigger than them was going on in the world. And their message began to light a fire, slowly and subtly over time. And this man named Saul of Tarsus, this man who had come to Jerusalem, he was agitated. He thought they were disturbing the peace. He didn't understand their message. And so he started to persecute them, to take up stones in his hand, the weight of his authority and power, and are literally stoned to death, these early Christians. But then on a Damascus road, he has this incredible experience with a light, and he turns himself around, and he begins to open himself to all that this message of Jesus could mean. And it's this stunning moment. He does a total 180 with his life, from being a persecutor to being a pioneer of the Christian faith. And Paul would go on to pen many of the letters of the New Testament, and he would spread this message of love throughout all of the Mediterranean basin. So we're talking all the way from Jerusalem to Rome itself by the end of his career. And this one man would urge us to love and to mercy and to see a vision of Jesus that's expansive and exciting. And then he wrote about, he expanded upon what Jesus was doing with his disciples. And he talked about each one of us having a gift. And he said, the gifts he gave were that some would be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until all of us come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to maturity, to the measure of the full stature of Christ. But speaking the truth in love, we must grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every ligament with which it is equipped, as each part is working properly, promotes the body's growth in building itself up in love. And so, the poem, for Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in eyes and lovely in limbs, not his. And what Paul expressed to us, and what Jesus expressed to us, and what Gerard Manley, is that each one of us has a gift and a calling, and that has a weight upon our world. So I want to invite you to look underneath your seat right now, and there should be a rock. Would you pick up that rock and put it in the palm of your hand? Feel its weight. Squeeze it and feel its shape pressing on your palm. God has given you gifts and talents, and they have weight. They have a weight. They have a dramatic gravity of pull on our world. When he was 17 years old, He witnessed his dad being arrested and persecuted and then ultimately killed in Alexandria, a place in Africa. And his name is Origen of Alexandria. And this moment of watching his dad be persecuted in the 3rd century, so only 300 years after Jesus, formed this incredible passion for his life, this thing that would stir him and excite him the rest of his days. In his moment in history, Christians were all over the world, and it was beginning to grow, but it wasn't yet when Constantine had made it the official religion. It was still a minority group, underground group of people meeting in different villages and different cities. And he knew that something needed to be done, so he had a blazing intellect. And he learned, and he studied, and he wrote books. And what he did was sort of pull together what it meant to be Christian. He wrote commentaries on the scripture. He wrote apologies, because at this time there was a lot of stereotypes about what a Christian was and what it wasn't. He pulled together church leaders. People traveled from all across the world to hear his teachings, to hear him speak. One lady paid for 7 scribes to write down every word that he said. And so he wrote more books than any other ancient author. He learned from everyone. He learned from the philosophers in his town, but he learned from the rabbis as well. No thought was off limit for Origen. And then finally, over time, he developed a kind of first curriculum for anyone who called himself Christian. So he gives of himself, and he creates this first ever curriculum of what it means to truly be Christian. After he died, one of his followers said this: he incited us more by what he did than by what he said. He was such a blazing example of this weight of your calling being given to others that he inspired people. And thousands of people read his work still today, and it inspires a vision of what Christianity could be. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his. Patrick was 16 years old and lived in Great Britain, And at the time, there was a raid on Great Britain, bandits, and he got separated from his family, and he was captured, and he was brought to Ireland, where he was made a slave in Ireland. And as a slave, he was a shepherd, and he witnessed what it meant to be in Ireland in the 5th century. He witnessed different kings coming and going. He witnessed tyranny and oppression, and as a slave, he experienced brutal loss and pain and loneliness until one day, he ran away. He managed to make it back and reunite with his family in England. And you would think that that'd be like a great end to his story, but through this all, Patrick, we know him today as St. Patrick, gave his life to Christ, and he became committed to these new teachings that Jesus was teaching him. And one day, as he was growing in his faith, he said, I'm going back to Ireland. I'm going to be a missionary to the people who enslaved me. And now you're thinking, wow, crazy dude, right? But it's unbelievably beautiful that the teaching of Jesus to love your enemies, that St. Patrick actually decided, I'm going to leave my homeland and go face to face with those who have been my enemy to show them the love and the grace and the peace of Christ. And so he goes back to Ireland. And over time, of course, it's difficult. The kingdoms are coming and going. He has to bribe kings in order to speak. He gets in trouble with a king because one of the king's daughter converts to Christianity. And it's like this epic story of him taking that little rock, taking the little gifts he had, and pouring it into the world. But over time, he gains a following. He gains converts. He invests into the life of people, and things begin to change in Ireland. And now, across the world, we all celebrate St. Patrick's Day, which is pretty amazing. He said this one time. He said, before I was humiliated, that's when he was in slavery, I was like a stone that lies in deep mud. And he who is mighty came up and his compassion raised me up and exalted me very high and placed me on top of the wall. So this image of the weight being pressed upon him and going from this change in his life from a slave to a missionary pioneer for all. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in eyes and lovely in limbs, not his. She did not know the word, no. She was a bold and courageous woman in the Middle Ages, Catherine of Siena, from 1347 to 1380. She wrote over 300 letters. When it came time for her to marry, she told her parents no. And she joined a Dominican sisterhood where that became her very vitality, her very life. When the bubonic plague went through the Middle Ages, and when no one else would sit with those who were dying of the plague, she sat with them. She cared for them. When no one else would go to prisoners and strangers on their deathbed, she sat there with them, listening to their life, explaining the life of Christ to them. She even wrote a letter to the Pope himself. Since God has given you authority and you have accepted it, you ought to be using the power and strength that is yours. Ouch. This is a middle-aged woman speaking to the Pope. The Pope at this time not only was the religious leader, but the spiritual leader and the political leader. So this is a bold, bold woman, right? And then she says, if you don't intend to use it, it would be better and more to God's honor and to the good of your soul to resign. Wow. Holy cow. Catherine of Siena, she once wrote a letter to a prostitute in her city telling the prostitute to take up the identity, the new identity she now has in Christ, and to leave this life of prostitution behind. This is a woman who is not afraid to give her passion, her love. This is a woman that says to every single woman, you have gifts and you have talents and they have a weight on this world. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his. And so we could talk right now about so many others throughout our world who have been Christ plays, right? Literally set up to bring forgiveness and compassion and love to all. We could talk about Martin Luther King Jr. We could talk about Mother Teresa in Calcutta, India. We could talk about more and more and more. But the point is that God has given you gifts and talents, and they have a weight. They have a gravitas to them. And what brings me to tears about the life of Jesus is that he didn't do his ministry alone. He gave his ministry away. And that one by one, even those of us who are fearful and afraid and don't know where to start often, have no idea what our gifts and talents are, God gives us gifts and talents and says, take the next best step. Give of yourself to others, to the world. And the irony is that all of these figures through history had the same type of self-doubt, had the same type of fears that plagued them. They had no idea, but they chose to take that rock and to give it to build something bigger than themselves. The Archbishop Desmond Tutu, every time he prays, I've listened a couple times, he says this word, and he's praying in community, and he says, may we all renew the face of the earth. It's such a beautiful phrase, right? And I love thinking about this, that when you take those gifts and talents, we together begin to renew the face of the earth. So instead of all that heartache and pain, this earth becomes a new place that's like humming and bustling with love and compassion and grace for all. So I want to invite you now to think one last time about this beautiful end of the poem. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his. So do you have your rock? Place your rock back in your hand and squeeze it in your palm. And think about those gifts and think about those talents and think about the weight that they have upon this world. You were created to live with a passion, a stirring excitement, and to give yourselves for others. So I want to invite you to stand with me right now. And what we want to do right now, because we always want to keep it alive and fresh and exciting at Wildflower here, is we're all going to, if when you're ready, at the right moment, Aaron's going to come and he's going to sing a song for us. And then I'm going to invite you, when you're ready, to come up to our center circle here and on that beautiful board to set your weight. And we're going to build a monument, a big rock fortress of all what our weights and talents can offer this world.